Hi guys, this is Natasha, aka Natty Willie from The Nerd Element, and I am here with Ronald T. Garner, CEO of Silence in the Library Publishing. Say hello.
Hello!
So we met at AwesomeCon DC during Easter weekend, and I was like, I would love to interview you, and you said yes, so that was great.
Yes, and here we are.
Okay, so how did Silence in the Library Publishing come about?
So, you know, I'm a writer. My wife is a published author, and we have several friends that are published authors. And we were sitting together as a group one night, and we were talking about the publishing industry. And really, it was myself and Janine and Brian Young, Mike Stackpole, and Aaron Alston. And we were all kind of sitting around, and we were kind of just talking about the state of the publishing industry and how, you know, how in traditional publishing, authors didn't really have as much input into the production of the book after they submitted to the publishers as an author might like. And you know, Mike Stackpole looked at Janine and Brian and I and was like, you know, you guys should really form your own thing. And Janine and Brian got really excited about it. And we went back and talked to Maggie Allen, who was another friend of ours. And so we decided to form Silence in the Library. And the whole idea behind Silence in the Library was that we would use the resources that are available out there that have kind of flattened the playing field in the publishing industry. Mm-hmm. To create the kind of organization in which authors are full partners in the publishing process, right? In other words, an author has a say in what their cover is going to look like. An author has a say in what their final edit's going to look like, right? We just thought it was kind of a strange idea to take the real creative driver in the entire process, which is the author, and say to them, okay, once you turn your book over to us, we're in charge now. Our marketing department's going to decide what your cover's going to look like, and our editors are going to decide what your final edit's going to look like. You're really taking the person who had the vision in the first place and telling them that that doesn't really have a place going forward. And I just think that that's a, you know, I think that you can produce better books by making everyone full partners in the process. And so that's kind of how it came about. And, you know, and by the way, and when we say full partners in the process, we mean the entire process, including, you know, profiting from the sales of books. The author gets as much from the sale of a book as the publishing company does. We believe that they should be, because they are our partners all the way through it, they should be compensated accordingly. We want to make it possible, more than anything, we want to make it possible to get really good books out there and to keep getting them out there and to keep giving authors incentives to write. And giving artists incentives to draw, right? I mean, we love producing books that have interior artwork. We love bringing artists into the process because we want to see a book, you know. So a long time ago, not in a galaxy far, far away, but
may the fourth be with you.
Yeah, exactly. A long time ago, publishing was a very different thing. Prior to the early 1900s, publishing was very different, and books were very different. Books were works of art, right? I mean, they had texture, and they had artwork inside. Even your text based books like novels and other fiction had artwork inside. The covers themselves were artwork, and we just kind of want to get back to that. We want to return that artistry to the publishing process, at least to our small corner of it.
Okay. So who came up with the name Silence in the Library, and why was the name chosen?
So that's an interesting story. So we were trying to figure out what to call ourselves, and we sent a message out to several of our friends, and we were like, hey, we're looking for a name for our publishing company. And we don't know what to call it. We've bandied about some names, and these are the names we've bandied about, but none of them really feel right. And one of our friends came back and said, you should call it Silence in the Library. And all of us were immediately struck, and we were like, yeah, that's a great name. I mean, that's a perfect name for a publishing company. We totally have to do that. And so we called it Silence in the Library. Understand that at the time, none of us were Doctor Who fans. And at this point, all of us are Doctor Who fans. My wife and I were the first ones in the group to pick it up. And as soon as we saw that episode, we were like, oh. But you know what? We still think it's a perfect name. We love Silence in the Library. We love just the imagery it invokes.
Yeah, shame on me for not catching that Doctor Who reference, because I remember that episode, because that's when we first met River, and I love River as a character. Oh my gosh, shame on me. Okay, so what were your favorite novels from your childhood as you were growing up?
Oh, there were so many, and you know, I actually answered this question the other day on a web book forum, and it made me think about it, so I actually have the list pretty much readily at hand. But you know, I love, it was such a wide variety of things. I mean, obviously I love fantasy, right? I cut my teeth on Tolkien, and very early on C.S. Lewis. So obviously I love the Narnia stories. I love Lord of the Rings, The Hobbit. I love all of that, but there's so much. Like, I grew up in the South, and so I read a lot of Mark Twain. And I fell in love with Mark Twain almost immediately, particularly with a book that not many people read, sadly enough, because it's an incredibly wonderful comedic story, but a book called A Connecticut Yankee in King Arthur's Court. Absolutely love that story. Love Huckleberry Finn, obviously. I loved H.G. Wells when I was a kid, particularly a story of his called The Food of the Gods. Of course, I read and reread the Time Machine, but The Food of the Gods, for some reason, really, really struck with me. And then I love anything about Holmes written by author Conan Doyle. I have read it and actually go back and read all of the Holmes stories once a year, every year. As far as science fiction, one of the first great loves of mine, book-wise, not just science fiction, but book-wise, period, was Isaac Asimov's Foundation Trilogy. Yeah, I mean, just an amazing, amazing series, and not the entire series, because he kind of loses me a little bit with the books after the first three, but those first three books, Foundation and Empire, Second Foundation, those are just amazing books. What else? Oh, Robert Heinlein. If you've never read a book called Stranger in a Strange Land by Robert Heinlein, then you should pick it up. Talk about a book that, and not just because the writing is so good, though it is, but the themes of tolerance and acceptance of other lifestyles that you wouldn't expect in writing from the 1950s, right? That's an amazing book as well. And I'm trying. Oh, Raymond Feist's Rift War Saga. Loved it. So the you know, magician apprentice, magician master, Silverthorn and A Darkness at Seth and On, those four books. Loved all four of those books. I read a lot of Terry Brooks when I was a kid, Sword of Shannara. Not my favorite, but certainly very enjoyable. And then the Dune, the first Dune book, Dune, by Frank Herbert, of course. Loved that. There's a whole list of them. Those are probably the top of the list. Well, and then there's one more that just is not fiction at all, and it's just kind of completely off to the out in the wild by itself. there's a book by a poet named Khalil Gibran called The Prophet, and I read that. I probably read that once a month throughout high school.
Oh wow, yeah, those are actually a pretty good list. I do remember reading Chronicles of Narnia, and I actually read the Foundation trilogy by Isaac Asimov when I was in like high school or middle school, and that was like my first tread into science fiction. And so I was like, okay, doesn't seem so bad. Maybe I can get into science fiction just a little bit without feeling lost with when they talk in technical terms, because I'm just like, yeah, I know how to use a computer. But when you go into the scientific part of it, I'm just like, yeah, you're losing me here.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, I'm the same way. I think you've got your fans of hard science fiction, you know, mm-hmm. your folks who are just like, you know, give me the scientific terminology and make it as accurate as possible and make it as technical as possible and I'll love it. And I'm with you. I'm just not one of those.
Yeah. So how often did you visit a library while growing up? Like, do you still visit your local library occasionally?
You know, I loved my library growing up, and I would skip school to go to the library on a regular basis when I was a kid. And you know, I was talking to the mother of one of my daughter's friends about this earlier today, because DC has made it so that, or has instituted a rule that that kids can, under a certain age, can't go into the public library without their parents.
Really?
Yeah, and that to me is just, I mean, I just can't even imagine. And it, you know, and I understand why they do it. They do it because they think that, you know, that they're going to somehow keep kids from being truant by doing that. But the truth is, let's face it, 90% of the kids out there that are truant are not truant so that they can go to the public library, right?
Mm-hmm.
So what they're really doing is they're limiting the access of children to reading and reference and study outside of their school or outside of those times that their parents can actually go with them. And that to me is just, I can't even fathom why, you know, I understand why they did it, but I can't fathom that they actually made the decision. Because like I said, when I was a kid, I absolutely loved the library. I lived in the library. And I still go on a regular basis. I don't go as much as I did when I was a kid.
Right,
because,
right.
You know, I was a kid back in the dark ages before there was an internet.
So. Right, right.
Yeah, it's true. I was a kid back when the internet was called Britannica or World Book, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I spent a lot of time just sitting in the library and reading, and mostly reading a lot of nonfiction, actually.
Oh, okay.
I had a curiosity about pretty much everything when I was a kid, and I had this wild notion that I could learn enough about everything to be proficient at it, which, you know, is obviously not true.
Okay, so what genre of novels does Silence of the Library publish? Other than science fiction and fantasy, but, yeah. It's so other than science fiction and fantasy, or do you also publish other genres?
So we're primarily science fiction and fantasy. Speculative fiction is what I would say.
Okay.
We stick really to speculative fiction, although we have, and this actually falls under the realm of speculative fiction. The reason I use the term speculative fiction is because I feel like the term science fiction and the term fantasy are too constricting, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because the truth is that there's a whole range of speculative fiction out there that weaves through science fiction and fantasy,
right,
and horror and, you know, techno thrillers and all kinds of stuff, and has elements of all of those things. And so I don't want to say, you know, we do exactly these things, because who knows, a book may come along that can't really be defined by any of those labels.
Mm-hmm.
So I use the broadest term that I can, which is speculative fiction, with the understanding that maybe even that term isn't broad enough. Really, the stuff that we publish is fiction. It has some kind of probably not currently realistic element to it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we think it is really cool. Now, there are a couple of things that we've published that are not, that don't fall under that. For instance, Brian Young wrote a book, Brian Young, you probably know, writes primarily speculative fiction, but he also wrote a book called A Children's Illustrated History of Presidential Assassination. And it is, no kidding, a children's book about all of the presidential assassinations and assassination attempts.
Oh, my.
Yeah, and he wrote it because his daughter was like, hey, Dad, this is a really cool subject, and I'd like to learn more about it. And they went out and they looked for a book that kind of brought it all into one place, and it just didn't exist. So, you know, he put it out there. And that was a really cool project. And so the cool factor overcame the not speculative fiction factor, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we included that. Now, we are in the near future going to launch another imprint, still owned by Silence in the Library, but another imprint where we're going to house all of our non-fiction stuff, basically. So that's on the horizon. But, you know, the truth is, we print stuff that we think is cool, and that's the reason we got into this business. And if something falls outside of the realm of, you know, what people consider to be science fiction, fantasy, whatever, and we still think it is cool and still want to print it, ultimately we're probably going to do it. What we don't want to be is we don't want to be a publishing house that is driven by labels.
Right.
You know, in any sense, we don't want to be driven by labels as to what type of stuff we print. We don't want to be driven by labels as to who we print stuff by, you know, what authors we pull in. We want to put stuff out there that we think needs to be out there and that may possibly not have made it through the traditional publishing process.
Okay, now in looking at your website, I did notice that you also feature artists. You've talked about that a little bit before, that did artwork, especially for the novels that are published on your website. Now, how did that come about as far as, like, creating their own little niche on the website, and, like, how did that come about?
Sure. So that's actually a relatively new thing.
Okay.
And initially we just had the books up there, and with anthologies particularly, we love to put interior art into the books.
Okay.
And we have worked with several amazing artists, and I and the other members of Silence in the Library came to the decision ultimately that you know, we wanted that we didn't want that stuff to not be available, because we made it available when we ran the Kickstarters for those projects, but we wanted it to be available afterward. Part of what I love about doing anthologies is the artwork. So, you know, I want other people who love that work to be able to access it for as long as possible. So that's what we did. We talked to the artists. We came to a deal with them about putting their artwork up on the page, and we've done that. And, you know, I think we will continue to do that. We'll probably, you know, as things get bigger and bigger and we've produced more and more work with more and more artwork in it, we will probably wind up having a separation between the artwork side and the book side, just because, you know, I don't want somebody to go look up, you know, something on our site and then get overwhelmed with artwork when they're looking for books, or vice versa. But yeah, as we get bigger, that will adjust, but it will never change. We will continue to offer the artwork. And the other things that we have created in conjunction with Kickstarters, as long as we still have them in stock. For instance, we created some limited edition challenge coins with Time Travel Tales, and we have a very limited stock of those remaining. They're up on the website for sale, and once they're gone, then we'll obviously take them down because it's a limited run and we're not going to produce anymore.
Okay. Now, people can purchase your books and the artwork directly on the website. Now, if we purchase an e-book, how are we able to download the book? I didn't quite finish purchasing any of your books yet, but I'm just like, well, how does that process work? Since I have a Kindle app and I have like a Barnes & Noble app, how does that work?
Yeah, so what it does is any book that we've got on our website is available in Mobi, which is the Kindle. The Nook version of EPUB, obviously, and PDF. And what happens is once you purchase it, and once the purchase runs through, you are automatically taken to a screen that has those downloads available for you.
Okay, cool beans. Now, will there be other avenues where we can purchase the author's books, like Amazon or Barnes & Noble eventually, or do you want to work in conjunction with them so you can get more books sold that way, or at least ebooks, that kind of a thing?
Well, most of our books are already up on Amazon.
Okay.
So, Time Travel Tales, A Hero by Any Other Name, all of Janine Spinlove's books, all of Brian Young's books.
Gilsey Martin's books I know are on Amazon.
Yeah, those are all on Amazon. Elected by Rory Shea, which is the current Kickstarter that we have running, also going to be up on Amazon. But they're also going to be up on Nook, and they're also going to be available for you on iBooks, and you can purchase them in Barnes & Noble. So all of those things are avenues for purchase for those books.
Now, you kind of answered this question already, but this maybe like the second part, like how involved are you in like the marketing and the creative process? Like how do you work with the author to make sure that their, like the artwork and like the marketing of the book is successful on both of yours parts? Like, you know, both of you are happy with how the book turns out and how it's marketed.
So we're deeply involved. I personally am deeply involved, and everyone else who is, you know, a member of Silence in the Library is deeply involved. More than anyone else, because I run the day-to-day operations. But you know, we, again, it's part of our model. We're very different than most publishers in that we want the author to be involved in that process all the way through. So the author has an input into the cover, and the author has input into what type of marketing we're going to do. But, you know, so does the publisher, obviously. We are partners in this. We're going to come to a decision amicably that suits all of us. And once we do that, then it is my job as the publisher to drive a substantial portion of that, just as it is the author's job to drive a substantial portion of it. So my answer is I am intimately involved in every step, all the way through.
Okay. Now, you did mention that Rory Shea's book was part of like a Kickstarter campaign. How often do you use Kickstarter, and how successful has that been as far as promoting and marketing your other books?
We use Kickstarter quite a bit. We actually probably use Kickstarter more than most publishers. Well, I know that we use Kickstarter more than most publishers because we have more successful Kickstarters than any other publisher out there. We have, to date, we have run 7 publishing Kickstarters or other crowdfunding campaigns. And I say other crowdfunding campaigns because we ran an Indiegogo for an anthology called Monkeying Around for a Good Cause, which was to raise money to help the author C.J. Henderson in his fight against cancer. And so we had to run that on Indiegogo because Kickstarter doesn't allow you to run charity projects. So we have run 7 publishing Kickstarters or other crowdfunding campaigns, and every single one of them has been successful. And 2 of them have been the 2 most successful prose anthology Kickstarters ever. So we do a lot of Kickstarter, to answer your question. And you know, we do a lot of Kickstarter for a couple of reasons. Number one, obviously, it's nice to know that your project's going to be funded before you put it out there, right?
Right.
It's nice to know that you've got the funding lined up for your book before you put anything out to market. So that's an obvious one. But the other thing is that one of the things that we wanted to do when we launched this this company and got into this business was we wanted to change the dynamic of the relationship, not just between the publisher and the author, but between the publisher, the author, and the reader. We want readers to have a voice in what comes to market, right?
Okay.
A direct voice. And that's what Kickstarter and other crowdfunding sites do. They give readers a direct voice in what comes to market. You know whether what you have available is something that people want immediately, because they're either going to fund it or they're not.
That is true. Because you can't get a gauge on what readers want to do unless you kind of put it out there and see, oh, will they pay for it when it actually comes out?
Right. You know, I mean, I think that the entire process works better if we empower everyone, right?
Mm-hmm.
If we only empower one group in this process, if you've got multiple groups involved in publishing a book, but the big three are the publisher, the writer, the author, and the reader, right?
Mm-hmm.
And if you only empower one of those people, then what you're doing is you're losing a lot of effort, and you're losing a lot of synergy that could be otherwise that could be employed and make the process better for everyone, and make the product better for everyone.
Okay. And tell us more about the anthologies that you have published. Apparently, you're currently taking submissions for Athena's Daughters Volume 2, because apparently the first volume is already published, which I still need to read and get. But, yeah, so tell us a little bit more about that.
So our first real project as a company was Time Travel Tales, which was an anthology. And that was one that was brought to us by Mike Stackpole and Aaron Alston, and we jumped at it. We were excited, and we jumped on board. And it's a group of stories, primarily time travel stories.
Mm-hmm.
But really, all of them are in some way time related, right? They all have time is a major element in all of them in some way, shape, or form. So, Time Travel Tales Volume 1. We funded through a Kickstarter, and it also funded Time Travel Tales Volume 2, which is coming out very soon. And then we launched an anthology called A Hero by Any Other Name that we did not with a Kickstarter, and that one is an anthology of superhero stories, but they're not your traditional superheroes, right? They're all kind of like your hapless superhero who, you know, doesn't quite get it, or your retired superhero who's, you know, just trying to still get it, or your villain who is forced to become a hero for some reason or another for a short period of time,
mm-hmm.
or your sidekick who has to take over when the hero, you know, is no longer able to do it. And so it's all, you know, kind of your offbeat kind of superhero stories. And that one was really fun. I've actually got a story in that one. That was a really fun anthology. And that one's obviously out there right now as well. And then we did Athena's Daughters. And Athena's Daughters is an anthology of stories by women about women, right?
Mm-hmm.
All of the protagonists and or the major characters, because some of the major characters are not necessarily protagonists. There are some that are just bad guys, but all of the major characters in the stories are women and strong women. And when I say strong women, because I think that's a term that gets overused quite a bit now.
Yes, it does.
Yeah,
unfortunately, and it's like, okay, I need to stop using it or use another term for it.
Yeah, because, you know, you think strong women and people go, oh, okay, you're going to have a big muscular woman who goes around and beats people up. But that's not what we mean. We mean, you know, the strength to make, you know, it's the strength you expect from any human being who is a good and decent human being, right? The strength to make hard decisions,
right?
When hard decisions have to be made, and the strength to carry on when life has pounded you to the point when you feel like you can't, right?
Right.
It's every kind of strength. And I think the reason that we put that anthology out there, and because initially it was the anthology was my idea, and I talked to Janine about it, and Janine was like, yeah, absolutely, I want to do this, and she and Maggie Allen, one of our partners, took it and just ran with it and turned it into an amazing anthology with a bunch of amazing authors. We got Sherwood Smith in there, we got Mary Robinette Cowell, we got Gail Z. Martin, and the list just goes on. Diana Peterfund, list just goes on and on. But anyway, so they took it. The reason that we wanted to do it, though, was because, I have a daughter, and she's 14 years old, and I look at media, and I realize that, to her, there aren't a lot of people out there in the front and center of media who look like her, mm-hmm. right? Particularly given that my daughter's adopted, and she's from Mozambique, so there certainly aren't a lot of women of color who are out there and in front, and there's just not a lot of representation out there, and there needs to be. So I don't know. We just thought that we'd try to rebalance that equation a little bit, at least as much as we could.
And so that
came out, and that one was, we put a Kickstarter out for that one. We were asking for something like $8,500, and it wound up making just over $44,000. It made enough, in fact, that it funded a companion anthology called Apollo's Daughters, which is stories about women. Again, I'll use that term, strong female characters, understanding that it means something different than what it has come to mean. Written by men, so it was interesting, and it was exhilarating to see that do that well. And those anthologies are all out there. We're getting ready to do another one at the end of May for an anthology called Heroes. That's going to have stories by Timothy Zahn and Mike Stackpole and Aaron Alston, who, unfortunately, of course, is no longer with us, but he got his story in for this before, and we're really excited about that one as well. So,
okay, so what other conventions will you be attending promoting Silence of the Library? Like, where can people see you at a different convention or be able to visit your booth?
Sure. So we, of course, we're just at AwesomeCon. We're getting ready to be at Con Carolinas. Down in North Carolina. We're heading out to Origins Game Fair in the middle of June in Ohio, in Columbus, Ohio. We are going to have Brian Young, who is a member of Silence in the Library, was just at Salt Lake City Comic Con and does a lot of the other conventions out in the West Coast. So if you look for Brian Young, a convention out there, then you'll know that there's going to be Silence in the Library representation. Janine and Brian and I are all going to be at San Diego Comic-Con.
Oh, yay, I'm going to. Yay, I can
see
your booth. Yay. Oh, yeah, Janine did mention that. I'm sorry. Yeah, she did mention that.
Yeah, so there will be other conventions. Our website is constantly under refinement because we can't constantly keep going, oh, yeah, we need to add this. Oh, wait, we need to have this too. Why are we doing this? And what we need to get is a list of the conventions that all of us will be at in the near future. So you can expect that that'll be up on the website here in the next couple of weeks or so.
All right. Well, thank you for taking the time to talk to me. Thank you very much.
Oh, thank you for having me. This has been great.
It was a nice conversation. You get to learn more about the publishing side of things and also just how a small publishing can actually make a difference as far as, helping out authors, helping out artists, and just moving towards, I guess, a new age as far as publishing in general. And just go ahead and mention just in general your website or where people can contact you, or sure, even where authors can contact you if they want to submit their works in order to be maybe go through the publishing process with you guys.
Sure. So you can find us on our website at silenceinthelibrarypublishing.com. It's a very long title, but that's it, silenceinthelibrarypublishing.com. You can submit to submissions at silenceinthelibrarypublishing.com. You can contact us. If you want to go, I tell you what, if you want to check out some of the things that we've done on Kickstarter, just go on to Kickstarter and look up Silence in the Library, and you can go and look at all of the projects that we've done. We've currently got one up for Rory Shea's Elected, which is the first novel in a three-novel set of story. It's a dystopian future stories, and that's an amazing, amazing set of books. I just fell in love with it as soon as I read it. It's aimed at primarily at the YA audience, but like so many aimed now at the YA audience, it's applicable to an entire spectrum of people. If you like things like The Hunger Games, then this is going to be something that's up your alley. The thing that I really love about it is that it not only is incredibly entertaining, and it's got, you know, intrigue and assassination and all of that stuff, but it also has some really, really pertinent messages that you know are important to us today, which is, you know, it talks about human impact on the environment and tolerance and acceptance, and I think all of those things are important as well.
Yes, and I definitely talked with Rory Shea, who's very nice, and her mom briefly at AwesomeCon, and her interview is already up on our website. And so I'm looking forward to reading that, especially since her love triangle is a little bit different than what you normally read. So I'm definitely,
yes, it is. Yes, yeah, it is.
It's different. So I'm like, okay, I can do different.
It's different in a good way though. I mean,
yes,
I think
it is different in a good way, but yeah.
That to me, I mean, that entire relationship, group relationship really brings out the particularly the issue of tolerance, right?
Yes, exactly.
And acceptance, and I think that's incredibly important. Again, anything that I publish, I look at with the eye of a father, mm-hmm. And you know, I want to know what, you know, how this is going to positively or negatively affect my child. And if it's something that's going to negatively affect my child that I wouldn't want them reading, then I'm probably not going to publish it. But if it's something that I can find, you know, not only entertaining, but something that's going to have a positive message that's going to you know, resonate, I think, across the board, particularly with my child, I think that's something that I tend to want to publish.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Well, thank you so much for the opportunity.